You have to justify it with the information security.
Of course, yeah. I'm right to be more. And you
have to build some cryptographic things.
We need to
testing
carry.
Today.
Let's go back to the old carrying keys back and forth, right?
Good afternoon. Welcome to the second NIST lecture of the fall. I'm very happy to have Martin Salbruch with us here today from the Cyber Innovation and Cyber Regulation. Apologies, Martin. From the European School of Management and Technology in Berlin. It's much easier to say that. It's really nice. Today he will give us a talk on implementing European cybersecurity regulations. So on the policy level, this is a really interesting contribution compared to last month. We talked about games and gamification of our educations. Now we talk about regulations, and we will be moving down the technology stack as we move forward in the semester. That's the plan. And then I have a short publicity announcement to make, because on the 26th of October you will all be invited to Sikkert Nok, which is the closing conference of the National Norwegian Security Month. And among the speakers there will be, on the technical side, there will be Matt Bishop, who has written the book that many of you are using for your courses. So, in addition with another exciting program. So on this little promotional pitch, I wish Martin, please take the floor.
Thank you, Niels. Thank you very much. Thank you, Christoph. Thank you very much for inviting me to a NIST lecture here in Gjøvik. I'm very happy to be here. I have never been on business travel in Norway. I have been in Norway several times with my family, but not on business travel, and I'm happy to be here and to share some thoughts on cybersecurity from a more policy and regulatory side. Let me start with introducing myself. I'm a computer scientist, but I'm also a lawyer, and I worked all my professional life in between computer science and law. Today I am a researcher at the European School of Management and Technology in Berlin. The ESMT is a leading German business school, a private business school, but also a university. So we also have PhD studies at the university. But the core is a business school. And at the ESMT, 1 year ago, we founded a new institute, the so-called Digital Society Institute, to conduct interdisciplinary research on questions of digitalization of society, so bringing together technical, legal, social science, and of course economic experts to discuss questions of digitization with a preliminary focus on cybersecurity and privacy. The institute is was built up by the ESMT with the help of some of our founders. ESMT is a foundation, and some of the founders, you see the names on the board, decided to give some more money in the foundation to have the Digital Society Institute brought up. Before I spent 20 years of my life in the federal government of Germany, the last 14 years a Director General for Information Technology, Cybersecurity and Digital Society in the Ministry of the Interior, and serving also as a federal deputy federal government CIO. So in my responsibility in the ministry was, on the one hand, the digitalization of German administration, IT management, a big IT project, and on the other side, cybersecurity, especially cybersecurity legislation, and overseeing German cybersecurity agency, the so-called BSI. Within the government, I worked much more on the legal side than on the technical side, and today I'm still working more on policy and legal side, but combining it with a more technical perspective on a lot of legal issues. I'm also working as a lecturer at a university, at the Karlsruhe University, KIT, for information security law. I would like to speak today about the EU cybersecurity regulations, but let me please start with my view on the cybersecurity challenge, a brief view on the cybersecurity challenge we all together face. Cybersecurity is a multidimensional challenge. We have a lot of factors influencing the state of cybersecurity. One very important factor is the innovation speed, not only the innovation in terms of development of new technology, but the market spread of technology has speeded up a lot. New technologies are within days reaching out to 50 to 100 million people worldwide. So we have real big issues with not so secure technology reaching a broad market in a few days or weeks. Second factor is complexity. The complexity of ICT products and services is rising. You know that cars today have 30 to 40 microprocessors. In the future, autonomous cars will have 200 microprocessors. So we have much more complex ICT systems. While the complexity is rising, the dependency on this complex infrastructure is rising too. All social infrastructure such as healthcare, traffic, public service, energy supply is more and more dependent, relies more and more on digital technology. In Germany, we have a big change in energy policy over the last years, and that is not only a change from coal and from nuclear energy to wind and water and sun energy, but it is a change from an infrastructure that was not digitized to a complete digital infrastructure in energy supply and energy transport. While all these factors are speeding up, our increasing ICT quality is not getting better. When I started my computer science studies more than 30 years ago, I was told by my professor in the first lecture, well, when you write a computer program, you will have two errors made in 1,000 lines of code. That has not changed. That has not changed over the year. If you look at the statistics of vulnerability in top software products, for example, there's a statistic, the top 50 software products in the world between 2009 and 2015, the number of vulnerabilities doubled. So vulnerabilities in software are not becoming a problem that is a minor problem. It is a more and more huge problem. We have not managed to rise the quality of ICT products. ICT security innovation is still one step behind the technology innovation in other fields. It's a rule over all the years, ICT security products are always one step behind. And ICT security products are typically not very well defined. If you have a look at the risk you want to address with a security product, you barely have information about a specific product. How much is this product reducing the risks? You don't have any systems to measure the risk-reducing effect of ICT security products. Some month ago, we had at my institute, we had a workshop with manufacturers of ICT security products, with agencies, with research on the quality of ICT security products. And we found out that in some cases, when you use IT security products, you have a net loss of security because those products are typically worse engineered compared to standard software. They are typically used with very high permissions on the systems. So they are a typical target, a typical vector for cyber attacks. And in some cases, you have a net loss of security with this product. Of course, one factor for cybersecurity is user awareness and user training that has become better over the years, but will not be the main factor to address cybersecurity. And what you all know is that threat development is spreading in every direction, it's spreading in terms of mode types, spreading in terms of actors, in terms of the number of threats, the sophistication of threats. Within this system of factors influencing cybersecurity, what are, from my perspective, the sustainable drivers for improving cybersecurity? What can we do? And there are three drivers I would like to mention. I think threat development, we do not have many opportunity to influence threat development because we have not solved the attribution problem yet. We have a lot of state sponsors for cyber attacks. So this is a huge global problem we will not solve in the middle term. I think we do not have many chances to address cybersecurity by raising user awareness and user training. User awareness and user training is always a lot of steps behind the technological development. Who in the room is always improving the home environment by firmware updates and patches and so on? So, and we can't educate all the people to become computer scientists. So what are the sustainable drivers from my side? I think three important things. One is we have to encourage the use of more secure systems. We have to increase the liability of the manufacturers of hardware and software, and we have to invest more in resilience of our dependent society. Let me follow to the EU cybersecurity regulations, and at the end I will ask what is the regulations contributing to these influences for cybersecurity. EU has passed a lot of regulation on cybersecurity over the last 2 or 3 years, and I can't describe all of them, so I will use a narrowly definition of cybersecurity regulation, only speaking about legal requirements for the security of systems, services and products. And those who build or use this product. So I will not speak about criminal law and criminal prosecution law and so on, but concentrating on what are the requirements for our products and services and for users and manufacturers. There are 4 issues the EU has addressed over the years. The first is critical infrastructure protection. The second is the cybersecurity of digital services, The third is the processing of personal data. And the last that is has not been addressed up to now, but will be addressed, is the security of ICT products. Critical infrastructure protection was the major idea of the EU NIST directive that has been adopted in 2016. The EU directive addressed seven sectors of critical infrastructures: energy, water supply, information technology, transport, healthcare, and finance. Operators that are providing services on the sectors, so-called essential services, have to fulfill requirements that are laid down in the directive. Not all operators are covered by the directives, only directive, only those with a substantial degree of supply. What are the measures the operators have to fulfill? The directive does not clearly say what technical measures the operators have to build into their systems. The directive just refers to the technical state of the art, to make the regulation somehow technical open for the future, that you have a level of security that can change with the level of technical sophistication. The fulfillment of the directive has to be proved by audits, so every operator has to perform audits for his critical infrastructures and to supply documents to the agencies, the cybersecurity agency responsible for the overseeing of the fulfillment of requirements. The agency must have the right to do inspections, and the agency can put fines for on those operators that has not fulfilled the requirements. What was politically very intensively discussed was the duty to report incidents to the government in cases of cyber attacks, because the companies were in fear that these information are printed in the press and that they have a loss of reputation, a loss of money. And the EU NIST directive is giving the member states the duty to build up enforcement abilities to enforce this directive. In Germany, we have implemented the directive by German law. The first law, I personally wrote it, was passed in 2015, just before the directive was adopted in Brussels, but it's the same sense of the directive. And in this year, Germany passed a new implementing law, so that the directive is now completely implemented in German law. We decided in Germany to add two sectors: food production and food supply, and insurance, because from our view, these are also critical infrastructures we have to cover by cybersecurity requirements. We had a very intensive and long and difficult debate about the question of substantial degree of supply. So what operators should be covered by the law? What operators should have to fulfill the requirement of the directives? At the end of the day, we decided to set a number of 500,000 people as a reference point. Those essential services that supply service to more than 500,000 people should be covered by cybersecurity laws. So, for example, for water supply for more than 500,000 people, that's easy, leads to being covered by the directive. It's more difficult in other sectors, for example, in healthcare. What do you need to provide healthcare for 500,000 people? We had intensive discussions with the sector association, and at the end of the day, we found out that you need a hospital that is has more than 30,000 patients a year, this is statistically the size of a hospital you need to cover the healthcare for 500,000 people. So we found sector-specific levels, and these sector-specific levels are now defined by law, and this law leads to 1,648 operators in Germany that all over the nine sectors are responsible for critical infrastructures and have to fulfill the requirements of the directive. The second question in implementation that is difficult is how do you address the EU idea of state-of-the-art measures? Because, of course, this should be technologically open, but on the other hand, of course, the providers of critical infrastructures ask the agencies, have I fulfilled the law? So have I done enough? And so you need some standards for this, and we decided to we decided for a system of sector-specific standards, because the dependency on information technology is very difficult. If you, for example, healthcare and water supply are very difficult sectors. So in Germany, it's possible that the sectors, the organizations of the sector, define sector-specific standards. And these standards are recognized by the government. And all the companies, the providers, then, if they fulfill the sector-specific standards, are on the safe side. Monitoring in Germany is done by the Federal Agency for Information Security, BSI, but the BSI, of course, can take private companies, third-party companies, to fulfill the job, such as TÜV organizations. Reporting of incident, cyber incidents, cyber attacks, has to be done on two different ways. What is not nice for the companies, but what is necessary from a view on, if you look at what the cyber attacks typically can lead to. On the one hand, a cyber attack, for example, on a water supply system, can be a problem for water supply, so the specific sectorial regulator for water supply needs to have all these information. And on the other hand, these cyber attacks can be cyber attacks that might spread to other sectors. So you need one instance, one organization, this is in Germany, the BSI, to have a complete picture of the cyber situation in Germany. So the companies have to report their incidents to two different agencies. The enforcement ability was assigned to the BSI, and the BSI is just at the moment building up so-called mobile incident response teams to help the operators of essential service to deal with cyber attacks. The EU NIS directive is a general IT security law that is for all sectors of critical infrastructures, but we have additionally sector-specific regulation, for example, on the field of telecommunications, on the field of banks, on the field of energy supply. So what we at the moment see is that cybersecurity regulation is always a mixture between general regulation and sector-specific regulation. The second field of regulation is the field of digital services. In Germany in 2015, when adopting this IT security law, we decided that we would like to have all web services with the minimum security standards to protect the personal data of the user of the services, the clients, for example, to protect the web services from being used as a platform, for example, for spreading malware, which is one of the bigger problem, drive-by infections. And we put this requirement of state-of-the-art security measures on all digital services, such as shops, media, platform. But we did not decide to have a system of control and fines and so on. The EU has decided for a slightly different way. The EU has decided that there are three kinds of digital services that are seen, such as digital critical infrastructures. These three are online marketplaces such as eBay and Amazon, online search engines such as Google, and cloud services, every kind of cloud services. For these kinds of digital services, we have nearly the same requirements than we have for critical infrastructures. So they have a full EU-wide duty to take risk-appropriate state-of-the-art measures to protect their services. What is different from critical infrastructures is that there is no there have to be no audits to perform. There is only an ex post control. So when incidents are reported, the agency can inspect the security of the digital services. Without any incidents, the digital service provider does not have to present the agency, the cybersecurity agencies, what they have done. And there are no regular inspections. So this is a system of higher protection, but it's not so broad. Online shops, regular online shops, are not in the focus of this directive. On the field of digital services, we have some sector-specific law, such as the eIDAS regulation for trust services, so for very important service, digital services that are needed to have trust in digital communication and digital contracts, such as e-signature or e-delivery services, electronic seals, or EID services. We have a higher security standards by a special regulation called eIDAS regulation. And what I see is that we will have sector-specific digital service regulation too, like the different sectors of critical infrastructures. We will also have a lot of regulatory burdens on special digital services. We have special regulation for payment services, PSD2, and we are facing upcoming regulation for e-health services over the internet, for example, or e-energy services. So digital services are somehow covered like critical infrastructures, but not as strict. Processing of personal data is covered by the new EU General Data Protection Regulation, GDPR, which is set into force in May 2018. And this regulation covers all processing of personal data. But it has an impact for ICT security, for information security too, because the operator of systems that process personal data have to take technical and organizational measures to protect the systems against IT security attacks, cybersecurity attacks. So there is a slightly different but a comparable system, as we have seen in the NIST directive, for all the IT systems that process personal data. That is not easy to implement for the companies, because the most systems today have personal data within, and for example, the personal data of the operator of the system, the user account or something else. So the most computer systems in companies are falling under the GDPR, and the operators have to take the measures out of Article 32 of the GDPR, and if they are critical infrastructures or digital service provider, they have to fulfill requirement of the NIST Directive too. And I have had a lot of talks with big companies who are not very sure how to combine these two legal systems and to combine these processes. What is a big issue with the GDPR is that the penalties that are defined in the GDPR are very, very high, and all the companies are in fear that they have to pay up to 4% of their worldwide revenues if they have some cyber incidents and personal data was stolen. The GDPR has some more provisions covering aspects of information security. I can't, due to the limited time, I can't describe these in detail, but as GDPR is, from my perspective, part of information security law that is necessary to have a look at if you build ICT security management processes. And the last sector is the field of ICT products. In the making and in the discussion of the NIST directive in Brussels, there were a lot of people suggesting to have regulation on the quality of ICT products, put more liability on the manufacturer, but that was not successful because it's very difficult to regulate the security of products. You have too many different kinds of products. You have too many different purposes of use of products. So one product can be used for home and entertainment, and the same product can be used for manufacturing. You have a global market with the most ICT manufacturers not sitting in Europe, but in Asia or in the United States. For that reason, the EU 2015 decided not to take regulatory efforts for ICT products. But that has slightly changed since then. 2 weeks ago, the President of the EU Commission, Jean-Claude Juncker, presented a so-called EU cybersecurity package, which is really a package, more than 20 documents, legal documents, with 1,200 pages describing how cybersecurity in Europe can be better. A part of this package is to develop the European Network and Information Security Agency in Greece to a full EU cybersecurity agency. One part of the package is a lot of implementing acts for the NIST directive. Another part is a so-called blueprint for cybersecurity crisis management, so for the work of the member states, the cooperation of the member states in the case of very serious cyber attacks. And one very important part of this package is a draft regulation for a EU cybersecurity certification framework. The idea of this regulation is that the EU provides a means to have more cybersecurity certification in the market. The framework should cover all kinds of ICT products and services, from smartphone to CCTV camera, from a manufacturing side to routers, but to make the certification itself voluntary. So the regulation does not say that this kind or that kind of products should be certified. It's just the possibility for the manufacturer to get a certificate for the security of the product. Of course, the requirement for the very different kinds of products have to be different. Therefore, for each product group, the EU Commission wants to adopt a special certification scheme. ENISA is entitled to work out the certification scheme, to present drafts, and the EU Commission proposes that the Commission itself should be the responsible body to adopt these schemes. And after a scheme is adopted, let me say we have a certification scheme for routers, the member states should not be allowed to make their own schemes, to have a European certification scheme for this kind of products. This draft regulation is now in the legislative process of the Council and of the European Parliament, and I think we will have a very strong discussion about this kind of legislation, because cyber security certification is not very successful up to now, and the idea of the Commission to make it more successful will have to face some problems. One of the problems is the speed of certification. Today, security certification takes a lot of time, typically a year or more of a year. Certification is very expensive. If I have, for example, I took the example of a router. If you want to make a certification of the router you have at home, this is very, very, very difficult because such a router has a lot of functions, just multimedia functions for streaming music and what else. I use my router at home for building my VPN and so on. And what is the problem with security certification, of course, is the lifetime of a certificate. My router is changing the firmware approximately every 2 or 3 months and always adding functionality to the router. And of course, you had to recertify this system after the firmware has changed. So there are a lot of obstacles with this draft regulation for cybersecurity certification framework, but I think in general it's a good idea to have a European path for joint cybersecurity certification. Let me summarize the trends in cybersecurity regulation in Europe. I see all over these four sectors. We have, of course, a growing area of regulation that's clear. We have not only general, we have sector-specific regulation, and more we have. At the moment, we are facing digitization of systems that are already regulated, such as the smart cars or trains or airplanes. These are regulated technology products, and the regulation will be changed to meet cybersecurity issues too. And this will also lead to growing regulation on the field of cybersecurity. The second trend is that there will be an interplay between sector and general law. What is difficult to implement cybersecurity for companies, because you have different requirements, for example, out of data protection law and out of critical infrastructure protection law for the same system. At the end of the day, the same ERP system in your company has to fulfill two different legal requirements. And you have cascading compliance obligations in terms of reporting incidents and, at the end of the day, varying supervisory authorities, data protection commissioner on the one hand and cybersecurity agencies on the other hand. So implementation of cybersecurity law will have more and more cost impacts for companies. And even we have no really hard requirements for manufacturers regarding of the security of their products, we will see an increasing pressure on the manufacturers, because the providers of essential services are looking for more contractual liability in all the areas they use the system, for example, for critical infrastructure protection. And we have an increasing need for cybersecurity confirmation and certification, for that the operator of the systems have something to show the agencies when the agencies are doing inspections of cybersecurity, for example, in critical infrastructures or digital services. Let me close with a look on my chart with sustainable drivers for improving cybersecurity. The EU has done a lot to get more secure systems in some sectors, especially critical infrastructures are on the field of digital services. And I think the EU has done a lot to increase the resilience. What is missing is to put more liability on the manufacturers. Certification schemes that are just voluntary are not putting the liability on the manufacturers. If you buy some products from Asia, they have no minimum security within, and they can be sold in the EU and connected to the internet. So my ideas for somehow increasing cybersecurity in the next steps are presented on this slide. I think we should do more to have research into high assurance systems, really formally verified digital systems where security can be proved. I think governments should redirect some of the public spendings in ICT in the purchase of high assurance systems. At the moment, European governments together spend 90 billion euros in ICT procurement. So they buy computers and software in a volume of 90 billion euros, and I think more of this money should be spent for secure systems and not only for Microsoft and SAP and so on. I think it is necessary that we have mandatory security requirements, minimum requirements for all systems that are connected to the internet. And I think this is possible by defining some duties of care for manufacturers, such as patch management, transparency about versions and patches, encouraging security certification. And the last ideas concerning the resilience of the society, I think we are missing two sectors in the list of critical infrastructures. I think we need legislation for public services. EU is not responsible, but the member states should have public service cybersecurity law. And like the United States of America, we should regard some of the manufacturing sectors, such as chemistry, as critical infrastructures too. And my last suggestion is that the idea of putting cybersecurity requirements on digital services is a good idea, but online platforms such as Facebook and so on are somehow critical infrastructures too, and they are not covered by the NIST directive up to now, and they should be covered by the European cybersecurity law too. So thank you for your attention, and I hope that you have now an idea of this sector of regulation that is spreading more and more and more, and I'm open to answer your questions. Thank you.
Thank you for the good perspectives, Martin. And we open up for the questions.
It's on?
Yeah.
As a lawyer and a computer scientist, do you think the GDPR is implementable and enforceable? And do you think that it will be efficient to serve its intended purpose?
How much time do I have? 1 hour or two? No, I think, of course, the GDPR is implementable, but I do not think that the GDPR will fulfill the intended ideas, because the implementation of the GDPR requires that the companies are doing a lot of checkbox implementation. They have to define compliance processes, they have to produce a lot of documents, risk assessment documents, and so on. They have to implement monitoring and reporting schemes, and so on. But at the end of the day, the idea of the GDPR was to reduce the risk for the individual, that the data of the individual is misused. And I think the GDPR will fail with meeting this goal, because it is a more bureaucratic way. If you agree, for example, to the conditions of iTunes shop, there is a big part of this document is about how they use your personal data, 4 or 5 pages, and nobody reads it and nobody understands it. but Apple has fulfilled the GDPR perfectly. And this is not in your interest and not in our interest. So I will, I think I foresee that in 3 or 4 years we will have a broad discussion in Europe that we need new privacy and cybersecurity law.
Okay, so thanks for a very interesting talk. In technology, you have a lot of innovation. So for example, iPhone, they brought out a fingerprint reader, which is good for security. In the field of security management, which is kind of your field, I believe, innovation is important, but many of the disciplines that go into, I should say, security management are more conservative. Okay, so I was thinking, maybe you can provide us with some examples of the kind of innovation that we need in the security management field for this whole problem to be addressed more effectively.
The risk landscape is evolving every day. The digital business models of the companies are changing every day. But the idea of IT security management is to have a fixed state of IT security management and to make some certification and so on, and to have this written down and executed over the years. And that is, from my perspective, is the wrong way to set up IT security that is risk appropriate. So I would implement more scientific, academic, experimental, technological foresight elements in IT security management. We are doing this in a product with a big German company, insurance company, worldwide operative. They have an IT security management systems, and they have regular meetings and regular reports, and they take people from academics like us or people from some hacker community on a regular basis in their processes and let them question how the processes are working in a situation where the technology probably has been changed or where the business model slightly differs and so on. So you need to bring the innovation and personnel in the security management system.
Thank you for your presentation. I have 2 questions based on what you presented to us today. You mentioned resilient societies one as one of the 3 pillars for enhanced cybersecurity, but you excluded user awareness from resilient societies. So how would you frame that?
Of course, it's good if you have a high user awareness to protect yourself. But user awareness is, from my perspective, not relevant for the resilience of a society. We have to build a system where the user is not so important for security, because we will never been able to have the users on a on enough sophistication of training that they will face the actual cybersecurity attack vectors. So they contribute a little bit, but they are not, from my perspective, not a part of a problem solving. I have one slide. I have to show you this slide because it says everything about this. This is a development of the standard passwords in the United States from 2011 to 2015. This is improvement in user awareness and user training.
In the sense of critical infrastructure, for example, the user, let's say in a SCADA control network, the user might be the operator or part of the operations.
Ah, okay.
And be considered a user.
Okay,
as well,
okay.
Which might not be familiar with cybersecurity and so on. Maybe that part can be regulated.
Okay, I'm sorry, you are completely right. The operators in critical infrastructures, all the operators that provide digital services which are critical, of course, have to be trained, and we have invested a lot. I just mentioned the end user. The end user, the people, the private users, they will not be able to contribute to cybersecurity in a sufficient manner.
Well, from the table, we can conclude that the users are getting more numerical in their approach.
Yeah, probably, yeah.
But one last question from Christoph.
Yeah, Martin, thank you for the talk. You mentioned the GDPR, and in the GDPR, there are now the fines introduced, and this created a lot of public attention, and maybe it helps. My question is, you mentioned also online search services, yeah? And we have discussed online search services for decades now in Europe. We tried to build our own services, but essentially we're using non-European services. And with using those services, we have the risk that they manipulate our society, that they manipulate our opinion, they manipulate potentially our knowledge. My question to you is in the European cybersecurity regulation any legal prevention, or is there any fine that we could post to those online services if there is a proof that they would actually manipulate knowledge?
The NIST directive sets out the goal of availability and the goal of data protection, but not the goal of the integrity of the business model. So NIST cyber regulation does not, for example, require Google to produce their search results in this way or that way. This is part of the business model. This is not regulated. So if we want search engines to have, for example, objective criteria for search results and so on, this is not part of the cybersecurity regulation. In Germany, we have this discussion. We had this discussion and passed a special law for Google and Facebook and so on, that they have to, for example, to delete some contact and so on, but it's not part of the cybersecurity regulation.
Thank you. That concludes the questioning part, and as always, there's the prize for the best student question, and that's for the GDPR question this time. There you are. Thank you. we encourage everybody to ask questions, because it's a lot is about the questions you ask.
Yeah.
And asking the right questions. Thank you, everybody, for joining. Thank you, Martin, for the talk. Looking forward to see you all back on the next NIST seminars and NIST lectures, and also for Secret NOC, as I said, towards the end of the month. As a souvenir, Martin, you could have the consortium cups, or you could have the just NTNU with a Master in Information Security cup.
Oh, great. That's great.
I think this is great. Yeah. Thank you so much for your talk.
Yes, thank you.
Thank you.